50 years ago, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act at the height of the civil rights movement. Producer Brianne Chasseau went to Alabama, where she followed a Wisconsin mother and daughter as they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge during the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, one of the events that preceded the passage of the act.
You're ready to cross the bridge?
I'm ready.
12-year-old Danielle Krim of Fitchburg and her mother Dawn are leaning against a tan building in downtown Selma, Alabama. They're surrounded by thousands of people, all waiting to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge for the historic reenactment of Bloody Sunday on its 50th anniversary.
Well, I'm looking forward to kind of feeling how Martin Luther King and all the other people felt when they went across that bridge, and feeling their spirits walking with me.
Just having an opportunity to experience history with my daughter. My mom did this with me when I was little. We had never gone back to anything this historic, but she was always one that made sure that we understood our history. And I think we had a special bond because of it. And I'm wanting to have that bond with my daughter. So I just felt like this is something that we needed to do together.
Dawn and Danielle are involved in a national health movement called Girl Trek. Made up of thousands of African-American women, Girl Trek encourages healthy living through walking. Hundreds of Girl Trekkers from around the country are in Selma for the anniversary, taking buses to be here today.
Well, it just adds another level to coming, because the reason this group of women came together was because those sheroes walked and made changes. And so it really is about taking care of ourselves, bonding, supporting one another, empowering one another, but also remembering that those women walked, and because they walked, lives changed, and because we walk, lives can change.
Eventually, Dawn, Danielle, and their fellow Girl Trekkers become a part of the crowds moving toward the bridge for the historic reenactment.
You just see a sea of people headed with one purpose and one focus, and that's what the march is about. Right now, we just feel like we're on a main street headed toward history.
I see a lot of people, like a lot of people, and a giant bridge with this arc thing over it that has holes in the top of the arc thing that has the word Edmund Pettus Bridge on it.
The crowd inches along, and a walk that usually takes 15 minutes or so stretches to more than an hour as thousands cross. But it's worth it. Eventually, Dawn and Danielle make it to the middle of the bridge.
You know, even though it was moving slow, that little bit of determination, think about all it took for them to get over that bridge. We didn't have any armed guards or horses or anything waiting on us, but I'm glad we did this.
I feel very proud of myself and my mom and everyone else who came today to walk across this bridge, because it was a very long walk. And I feel very proud of the people who came 50 years ago who walked across this bridge for their own rights.
All right, we're going to walk back down, shall we?
We shall.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org. In the summer, before those famous marches in Selma, there was a campaign known as Mississippi Freedom Summer Project, a highly organized effort to help African Americans in the Deep South register to vote. Joining us now to talk more about that turbulent time is Michael Edmonds, Deputy Director of the Library Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's the editor of the book Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer Reader, collecting firsthand stories of that era. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, take us to Freedom Summer. Talk about what was going on there and who was directing that, who was leading that effort to get people to vote.
It was conceived in the late fall and winter of 63 and 64 by leaders of SNCC and CORE, SNCC being the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and CORE, the Council on Racial Equality. And they had been working together and separately in Mississippi and in the Deep South for 2-3 years without really having much effect. It just didn't get any publicity or cause any change when black people were discriminated against or beat up or even killed. And they thought if they could attract a large number of northern white volunteers and they were the ones getting their heads beat, it might change the country's attitudes.
Well, talk about the people. That people would go around in teams, door-to-door in African-American communities, some local African-Americans and some Midwesterners, maybe even Wisconsin students often.
About 30 young people from Wisconsin volunteered to go down that summer of 1964. There were about 900 students or northerners and in all, and about 120 paid staff members from SNCC and CORE. And voter registration was part of what they did. The white volunteers lived in the segregated black communities, experienced poverty as they had probably never imagined it before, and spent part of each day going around trying to persuade black people it was worthwhile to go to the county courthouse and try to register to vote, even though it would cost them their home or their job or their livelihood. It was a big thing to ask of people. And as the child who was on Wisconsin Life a minute ago said, you gain a new respect for the courage of those local people as you study the events.
Let's talk more about that risk, because you think now if you're doing a door-to-door get-out-the-vote campaign, somebody might yell at you if they disagree with you or don't want you on their porch. There's some very serious consequences for people. Can you talk about the threats they faced?
Well, on the very first day of Freedom Summer, June 21st, 1964, three volunteers were stopped by the police, taken to jail in a small town in Mississippi, and after dark turned over to the Klan. It was several weeks later before their bodies were found, and they had been tortured and murdered. All the volunteers knew when they went missing what had happened to them, and they all realized they were risking their lives by being down there to confront segregation.
Talking to Michael Edmonds, author of the book, editor of the book, Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer Reader. Well, let's meet some of the people in the book, some of the firsthand stories. A combination of courage and terror, I think you said once, permeates the stories they tell. Tell us some of what we see in these firsthand accounts.
There are multiple points of view in the book that try to represent the experience of the people who were there. Certainly the northern volunteers are the ones we've heard the most about over the intervening decades. But the local people, and there were at least 60 or 70,000 who risked their lives to participate, their voices have not come down the decades as clearly. Many had their homes firebombed or shot into simply for hosting white volunteers. When the officials were looking for the bodies of the three volunteers who were killed, they turned up other bodies as well, local black residents who had been active in the movement and whose disappearance had not been recorded. There are a large number of local heroes whose stories needed to be told, which was one reason we put the book together.
Did you also put it together because you were worried that these stories and the horror of what was going on has faded in our historical memory?
Well, it certainly has faded. And as I've gone around the state and the country talking to students, the young people are amazed that things could have been that bad.
In this country.
Yeah. A middle schooler in Kenosha told her teacher after looking at a Freedom Summer exhibit we created, she said, I never knew my grandmother had to be that brave. And that was a high point of the project for me, because that's what we do in the history business, is we try to create those kinds of insights. But most Americans can't remember a world where everyone on TV was white, every official you interacted with was white, and all aspects of life were segregated. Freedom Summer, along with Selma, were the two catalysts that led to the overturn of segregation in America.
You've got these documents in your book. What are they? Where did they come from? What kind of written records did the participants leave?
The records came from a really creative and bold collecting effort that the Wisconsin Historical Society did just as the events were unfolding. Some of the volunteers came back to Madison to be UW graduate students, and they persuaded the director of the Historical Society that records at the grassroots level had to be collected. So he put them on the payroll and sent them back south, and they literally knocked on doors and went through segregated black neighborhoods in 66 and 67, asking people for their papers. Without that massive collecting evidence, they brought back tens of thousands of records. Without that collecting effort, we wouldn't know what happened on the ground in the civil rights movement in the South. We'd only have the central office files of the NAACP and institutional records like that.
That's amazing that there is that awareness that, hey, we're living history now. This is history being made, and we have to do something to preserve it.
The Historical Society has always thought of current events as just the froth on the wave of history. What was really important was that these young people were bold enough to risk their own lives to collect the records and make sure that the voices of marginalized and underrepresented activists survived.
That this is 3 or 4 years after the Freedom Summer itself. It was still a dangerous time and place to be.
People were still being killed. Yes.
You also, in the book, collect not just participants in the Freedom Summer, but opponents of Freedom Summer. I believe there are documents from the Ku Klux Klan in there, some governmental response. What kind of things did you feel were important to include?
Well, in creating any historical anthology of documents, you want to have as many points of view as possible. And so we did include the white supremacist point of view, both the Klan and more mainstream groups. White residents in the South took white supremacy and segregation for granted. It was normal. It's all they had ever known. It's what their ministers and their teachers taught them was proper. And that's an important point for people to grasp today, because we don't believe that today on such a large scale.
We've got these written records. This is a generation who some of them are no longer with us. They were killed then. They've passed on since. Is there an effort out there, do you know, is it important to collect oral histories from the people who are still around, still remember the terror of those days?
In fact, the Oral History Project started in the 1980s and 1990s. Many Southern institutions by then were integrated, and they realized they had not collected evidence of this important turning point in their own history, and they went out and interviewed local people. The students who went south and collected records for us brought some of the first portable tape recorders with them, and we have a few dozen interviews done in 65 and 66.
You mentioned sharing some of these stories with students in schools in the state. Kenosha, you mentioned, is this still an ongoing effort to pass on what you've collected here to today's students?
It is. We produced a teacher's guide for how to teach not just the history of Freedom Summer, but also Milwaukee's desegregation struggle in the years just afterwards, and distributed that to 1,000 social studies teachers around Wisconsin. That's still available if anybody wants, any teachers would like to contact me.
With very serious conversations, issues about race still going on in the United States, is the Wisconsin Historical Society collecting stories like this now, 2015?
Absolutely, absolutely. Race is one of the issues that will always be a big part of American history.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Michael Edmonds, Deputy Director of the Library Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's editor of the book Risking Everything, A Freedom Summer Reader.